Okay, everybody, Travis Tallstrup here, and welcome to our weekly Co-Invest group call. We'll have a few people showing up here as we start. But while we're getting started and waiting for the few people to arrive, I just wanted to announce a couple of quick things. First and foremost, a special welcome to three of our brand new members. We've got Clark Moffitt from Fallbrook, California, very successful financial advisor up there. And we're excited he came through the Dent Research Network, and we're excited to have him on board, as well as his brother, Jeff Moffitt, a successful attorney out of Los Angeles. And also Sam Marquez, a successful real estate investor out of Tucson, Arizona. So welcome to the three of you, our newest members here over the last couple of weeks. We look forward to having you as part of the group, and please forward any questions, comments, feedback, anything that you've got for us along the way. We appreciate that. So announcement number two, October 23rd and 24th, we've got our Max ROI with Junior Liens workshop coming up here at the Hilton Mission Bay in San Diego. We already have 21 people registered, and it does seat 35. So if you do plan on coming, please get back to us as quickly as possible. And if you are bringing a guest, we do need to know that. So in the email we sent, that you can go to capstonefundinggroup.com and click on workshops, and it'll have some information there if you still have any questions about that. So we're excited about that, and we will be recording that, and that will be a 10-module course that people can study online as well after the fact, that you'll have access to as members of the group. And you'll notice those changes in the members area will continue to become more and more timeline driven, and the content that's already been recorded for each part of the process will be posted there. So, and look for any documents that you can just, you know, save as and edit your own information in there as well, exactly below each of that content. So today, are you there, Sabrina? Let's just make sure Sabrina's on. Let's unmute Sabrina.
Yes, I'm here.
Very, very good. So welcome, Sabrina. For those of you don't know Sabrina, some of you are new to the group, but just a quick little intro. I'm excited to have her as part of the group. A lot of people, we just got back from Noteworthy, and man, it was exhausting yet exhilarating. You know, we had a booth, I gave a presentation there, and hopefully the host took note. We were in a breakout room, and we had every seat was full, and people were sitting on the floor, people standing at the back, people, they opened up the doors, and it was back. It was great. Lots of great content. And I guess people wanted to hear about the top 10 mistakes we've made over the last 12 months, and how you can avoid them. And one of the ways to avoid a lot of our mistakes in the future is just bringing on somebody like Sabrina, who's got a track record here in the industry. So really quick, Sabrina, just so we have it again, just tell really quick the group. We got some new people on and a special guest as well. So can you just tell them a little bit about yourself and just before we jump into today's training?
Well, I have 20 years of experience in mortgage collection experience. I ran a hedge fund for 5 years. I worked in corporate banking on the origination side and also on the collection side. And that's kind of me in a nutshell.
Well, you're being a little bit humble. I've, you know, done some own digging on my own and found out that there was over $39 million of assets that you were working with at your recent position at a hedge fund, and primarily focused on non-performing first and seconds, correct?
That is correct.
So that's very exciting to us, you know, working with all aspects of the workout process, and we've seen that to be very helpful in our own files. But well, thank you for that. I know you wanted to talk today specifically about in dealing with junior liens. Obviously, we're going to have more and more training on some of these first mortgage pools that we're looking at and will eventually be acquiring. But the training we've got today is focused primarily on dealing with junior liens and the three types of equity. So let's jump right into that. And then I will bring, we've had two emails come in. You know, one came in on Friday, it was literally just after I got done presenting, and I wish it would have came just before, because it's kind of fun to show those real time settlements that come in. So I'll actually save that for once you're done, Sabrina, and we'll talk about the file that the group participated in a workout exercise, and what they would do based on the offer back from our borrower out in Florida. And I'll give you the results. Some of you will be curious as to what the results were and how we ended up settling that out, but it's official. And we're just getting that paperwork done. And we'll have a formal write-up that we'll actually put below in the notes on the page below this call, which I think you guys will find very beneficial. So let's jump into the three types of equity. And once we're done that, we'll go through a little bit on this particular settlement and a little checklist that we've put together, you know, which I, being part of other training memberships, et cetera, you know, some of the things I wished we had, you know, to have in our own group, right, so that we could do that. So we're putting that together now. We'll post that directly below this content. So jump right into that with us, Sabrina. The three types of equity and how that affects your decisions.
Well, as note buyers, we always want to get loans with equity. That, you know, that's the home run. But there is something that's worth more than actual equity sometimes when it comes to a homeowner paying us. And that equity is emotional equity. That's number two that I want to approach and address. And then the third type of equity is, well, there's really four: partial equity and then no equity. So let me repeat that. There's high equity, there's partial equity, there's no equity, and there's emotional equity. And when you actually look at that, when you're doing your due diligence and when you're trying to make a business decision on what you're going to do or where you're going to, how you're going to move forward with your files, sometimes it could actually be priceless in reference to knowing what you're doing. The high equity, like I said, is the home run. That's a place where we actually know that our second lien position is covered and we're whole. The second one is partial equity, where we're slightly covered, but we don't know what we're going to do, and there's a little bit of jeopardy of the homeowner either doing a cram down or a partial lien strip. No equity, we actually are looking at being stripped if a borrower files a Chapter 7 or 13, depending on what state in the Chapter 7. But the emotional equity is what can make us rich. And that emotional equity is when you can see that the lawn is cut, that the homeowner actually has a vested interest in the property and they're taking care of it, that, you know, they have lawn furniture on the porch, the patio's done. You can tell that from a curb snapshot of somebody going out to the property. And people say, well, how do you get someone to pay with emotional equity? And how do you know that there's emotional equity other than looking at the property? After you talk to a homeowner, you actually know if they're connected or they're disconnected to their property, if they're ready to walk away or not.
One comment really quick, Sabrina, on that. I know one of my top 10 mistakes in the presentation that I shared up at Noteworthy this past weekend, it was actually my second that I listed right up at the top, and it was underestimating the power of emotional equity. So you talked about the three types of equity, and obviously they affect the borrower in different ways, but what I'm learning, you've taught me this, I'm learning this myself as I talk to the different borrowers, I'm learning this through, you know, Monica and Kristen, who are working some of our files, that emotional equity can trump all three of the other types of equity just because it's so powerful if someone really wants to stay. And some of these numbers just do not make sense. And, you know, and they never will from a traditional valuation standpoint, but yet it's very important. So maybe just comment, you know, on that, because I know I've been guilty of underestimating the power of emotional equity.
If you talk to a homeowner and they actually are at a parent's home or their parents live with them in a home, it is so, so valuable. Even though if they haven't made a payment on their mortgage in 3 to 5 years, and they actually talk to someone who's human and treats them decent, you would be amazed at what you can get out of them. You might not be able to get a chunk of money out of them initially, but you will get them to make some type of a commitment to start making payments to you, to move heaven and earth to do what they need to do for home retention.
That's great. That's great. One of the things I was just going to comment on, and if you tell me if you've got some additional comments on that, we can keep going. But I was going to talk about this workout that we did recently. And this was one where there was both in a recent pool that we did. I ranked this as our number one asset. It did have high equity compared to pretty much every other loan we're buying is either, you know, kind of right there at par. It's like with the value of the property or drastically underwater. This particular one, hold on, got someone who's joined us. Sorry about that. We'll mute them out. Okay, I tried. Sorry. Someone else helping me mute out. So, sorry about that. Let me just pull this up. So, the workout that we had, this was a property in Florida, and it was one of the assets that we had. Just to update people, we got a few new people on the call, but 2 weeks ago we went through this exercise. And our original investment in this property was just under $20,000, $19,983.07. And the original loan balance was $132,900. At the time that they stopped paying the UPB, if you want to jot some of these down and kind of follow through where we ended up, but $124,793, that was the unpaid principal balance, a 7.2% rate. Original rate, and the original payment was $956. And when we go about our due diligence on some of these, we're tracking two numbers. What is the CLTV, the combined loan to value, with our investment at the CFG level? And then we also do it on the UPB CLTV, which is both the first and second mortgage. And as often as possible, we're tracking the actual payoff amount that we're able to obtain on the first mortgage through the automated hotline, you know, payoff line through their first mortgage lender. And it gives us a really solid number to know where we're at. And this particular borrower was $42,000 behind in arrearages and lates for a total due of $167,644. And we put out three options to them. Just to give you a little backstory, this particular borrower was one of the most belligerent borrowers to me, and I was trying to help him. So I had this baggage in my mind from the first time he was just frustrated, because we were originally contacted by their title company who approached us about a payoff amount, but in reality, they're trying to do a refi. In reality, they were just trying to actually get us to subordinate. And so obviously we said, well, we'd love to subordinate. We just need to get them to start paying again. And so that's what led to a phone call about 3 or 4 days later. And he got real frustrated with me on the phone because he could see that, you know, we were there and we were going to get more than he thought. And he thought he was going to offer us $5,000 above what we bought it for and get away with it. And he would, you know, run up our attorney tab and everything. Had a few choice words for me beyond that. But what we ended up doing, finally, he came around once we prepared a complaint with the attorney. And prior to filing it, this is a technique you guys can write down. We actually emailed over the actual copy of the complaint that I had notarized. Monica did that along with an invoice from the borrower for the full foreclosure amount. And we said, hey, you know, we're kind of at our wit's end here. He had missed a lot of deadlines, and which is another mistake, you know, follow through and do what you say you're going to do. that we've made, that I've made in the past. And this time we're just like, okay, we're going to go invest. This one had equity. Let's just go ahead and foreclose if he's not going to cooperate. And we put out there three options just so you guys have them. We'll actually give you the two we did, but one was a 69,000, just under 70,000, 69,940. And we put that out there as a settlement offer. And then we had a couple of payment plans where he would come in with 20,000 down and pay $460 over 360 months. And I literally offered him a 2% interest rate, which, learning what we've learned over the last little while, that's kind of glad he didn't accept that. But that's a topic for another call coming up on how to structure some of your modifications for future resale once they're reperforming. Anyway, so that's what we had out there. And the attorney at the time of the call 2 weeks ago had come back with an offer and said, you know, he can pay a $50,000, just to give you the back and forth here a little bit. He says he can come up with $50,000. We knew that he had $48,000 in his 401k, so we knew he was coming up with some additional money from somewhere else. So at $50,000, you know, we were at 69, and we just answered back, and we didn't budge, and just said, we need to know what you can do here within the next, I think we gave him 72 hours. If you're on there, Monica, you can feel free to chime in and give some of the details here. But anyway, that's what we ended up doing, and we just sat there, and it came up close to the deadline, and right at the deadline that we'd given to respond, they came back and raised to $12,000 to $62,000, and then that was when where we were at on the call a couple weeks ago. And so we had several of you chime in and present some offers, and what we ended up doing, just so you know what we did, we actually went back, and it was, you know, all in with all our fees, et cetera, would have been about 72 or 73,000. And so I opted to, you know, stay firm on our price, on our settlement number, but we would pay the fees. So, you know, it'd be net out, you know, right around 3,200, something like that. And we put it back there and with another deadline. So just make sure you always include your deadlines. But we sat on that. And then Friday, we had a very busy day at our booth up at Noteworthy. And I, that was the day I gave my presentation, and we just had one-on-one appointments set up. So I didn't even get into my email, but I woke up that next morning and had the email from their attorney that had come in later Friday afternoon, which we'll actually document that and share it where you can study the steps of this workout. And we'll include that just below this call on the webpage there in the members area. But it was exciting to get where they accepted that offer, but what they wanted to do, and I'll have Sabrina chime in on some ways to, we could have maybe structured this a little bit differently, but also she can give us a checklist of what to do next. I think that's very important. Once you receive that, what are the steps that need to take place? So bottom line, they came back and said, okay, he'll accept the offer, but he needs until the 27th to get the money, right? So I know that we had a few people, you know, suggest splitting the difference with them between the 70,000 roughly and the 62. And, you know, we just decided that because of the equity position on the property that we wanted to stay firm, but we would actually eat the legal fees. And one comment that the attorney actually had was that our offer was very fair with them paying the legal fees. So that was good to hear after the fact, but maybe comment on that, Sabrina. But then, once you've done that, because you talked about the deposit, maybe just talk about that, because that's something we answered back with. But then they said, hey, that's, he needs the time till the 27th because he's getting money out of his 401k. How's he going to make a deposit? And then let's just share with the group the steps that need to take place once you've done the settlement agreement, so that we actually have that documented when someone gets a cash settlement, and they can be very thorough in what they need to do to get a settlement. So we're obviously very happy, right, with the return on this particular one. And just to, for the guys that are hearing this first, some of you already know this, on this particular pool, we bought, it was a $600,000 purchase on 45 assets that bought $3.6 million in UPB. And so just to get a feel for that, if we net out $65,000, roughly, it's going to be more than that, maybe 66 and change. But that covers, that's the beautiful thing, that it took me a long time to really buy into even putting money out there in second mortgages and diversifying out of just first mortgages. That particular asset, because we've spread our risk, that covers 10%, over 10% of the total portfolio, and you still got 44 other loans to go work out. So that's the power of just getting some settlements coming in the door, and they add up. So sorry to be a little bit long-winded there, but I wanted to give you some of those details. Go ahead, Sabrina.
Well, the first thing that you need to do is if your loan is boarded, you need to actually still request a payoff from your servicer when these requests start to come wiring down. And then also, if you have an accounting department, you need to pull all invoices on things that you've advanced or pending invoices that you have on the file, just so you make sure that you know all the expenses that you had on your file. The more your portfolio grows, the more you're not going to be conscientious about everything that you've advanced on your file. So you want to make sure that when you're giving a solid number in reference to giving a settlement amount on an account, that you're covering your expenses on top of what you want or you plan to net on the deal, not just what you paid for it.
Well, and I appreciate that comment real quick, because that's Monica had done that for me and provided that for us as we were going back and forth and helping us make the decision. So she had pulled those documents, and I appreciate you saying that, because I was thinking, you know, after, and I'm glad you commented on, well, this is what you do right before, so you know it's all there. So repeat one more time the servicing aspect, because that's something I think, you know, that you still got to request a payoff through a servicer, because we do have some that are self-servicing in the group and others that have their loans boarded with a servicer. So that's a key step. Maybe just repeat that before jumping to the next one.
If you have your loan with the servicer, you need to email your servicer to get a correct payoff or log into their system, whatever that process is with your servicer, to make sure that you know what the true payoff is and not just based off of what you're looking at in your system.
And and the next steps that you're going to tell us, maybe just if you could, I'm kind of putting you on the spot here, but if we're self-servicing, what needs to take place if we're servicing boarded with a servicer? Because now that you've just said that, I know there's a differentiation between our portfolio versus maybe others that have boarded with a servicer. So keep going.
And if you're self-servicing, you need to just make sure that you're calculating or your system has the ability to calculate what your payoff is, just so you know what that true number is, so you know how much you're actually discounting your loan for. The other thing is that you need to make sure that there's no third parties involved, because this is sometimes key when you're actually using someone to negotiate a settlement. Sometimes that negotiator is absorbing some of your expenses or some of the things, not expenses, but some of the money that you actually could recover when a borrower has actually requested a settlement. So you need to, do some fact-finding and do a little bit of digging to see if they're represented by a short sale specialist, if they're represented by a BK attorney, if they're represented by an attorney, what is the role of that attorney, and see if you can find out how much their fees are, because you want to actually negotiate those fees down as well.
Okay, great. Great, great. I don't look forward to those conversations with the attorney negotiating his fees, but you got to ask. You never get what you don't ask for.
Right. Once you've done that, you need to draft a letter stating that this is the settlement amount you're willing to accept, and then you put your guidelines in. If you're requiring a down payment as a good faith payment, if you're giving them a deadline on when they actually need to get the funds in, and give them instructions on how they're going to make that payment, by certified check or by wire, however you choose to receive those funds. If you're servicing your own loans, you can receive that money in hand. You can have it wired, you can have a certified check overnighted to you. If you have a loan with the servicer and you're giving them instructions per a settlement letter, your servicer is going to be very, very upset with you if you have them send you that money and you put it in the bank and you don't send it to them, because then that messes up their accounting. A lot of us still do it, but I'm letting you know that that's a way to really upset your servicer if you have a servicer and you instruct the borrower to send those funds to your office directly. It's your choice, but I'm making you aware that you're making a conscious decision to have those funds sent to you versus going to your servicer. You waited all this long. You can wait a few more days and just have it sent to the servicer.
So what you're saying then, this particular step, so first notifying the servicer if they're with a servicer, even prior to that, you know, pulling all outstanding invoices or costs that have already been paid to understand what your all-in number is on a loan, that's even before that. Then we're moving to the next step, which is an acknowledgement letter, correct? Mm-hmm. And getting that out to the actual borrower. If you're self-servicing.
And a representative.
Exactly. Okay, very good. So that's the step, that acknowledgement. And does that need to be physical mail or can that be email?
I would, if you're corresponding, I would actually send it. If I send an email, I would send a proof of open receipt. And I would also send it regular mail and I would send it certified mail so they can't say they did not get it.
Perfect. Okay, so just CYA. All right, very good. So after that now, and in that acknowledgement letter, you're outlining deposit, what you want as a deposit. In this case, we wanted them, you know, I think we said by Thursday to get $20,000 deposit. The attorney answered back saying, oh, we don't have $20,000. That's why they're asking for an extension. So now we need to be acknowledging back and getting that done. So what's the step? So all that's outlined in the acknowledgement letter. Then what? We're moving into a couple of other important documents. Please talk about those.
Well, once you've actually gotten your money in, then you actually have to do a couple of things. You receive the money. You have to make a decision on if you're going to send a 1099 or not. I'm not giving you tax advice. So you need to talk to your accountant about issuing a 1099 in reference to the forgiveness of debt, whether you issue one or whether you don't.
And one comment on that, Sabrina, in this particular case, part of the settlement was that we will pay that amount if us as lenders agree not to pursue a deficiency judgment for the remaining amount. So in that case, we would not be sending out a 1099. So that's just something that if it's part of that, obviously that decision's made for you. But I just wanted to make a note of that. Sometimes that's what settlements come back with. So continue on.
Well, no, I need to clarify that the deficiency judgment is basically sometimes you can agree to release the mortgage. You can agree to release the mortgage, but still hold the borrower liable for the remaining amount of the debt. A 1099 is actually associated with the taxes, where they would actually have to claim that forgiveness of debt as income on their taxes. There's a difference in that language.
And I appreciate you clarifying that. This particular settlement came with a request for both of those items. So thank you for clarifying that they did not want us to pursue either of those options. So, okay, great. Great clarification.
So just so you know, if you opt not to send the borrower 1099-C, there is a penalty from the IRS, and I think it's $450 to $1,000. And I don't quote me on the dollar amount, but I know that there is a penalty if the IRS finds out that you did not issue that to the borrower. I will tell you, in the past, I have made the decision on not giving a 1099-C to a borrower. It was worth the risk, and I haven't been called on the carpet about it. But again, I'm not giving you legal advice in reference to taxes.
I appreciate that. And one thing we'll do, which I wish other areas where I was getting trained on would have provided this for us, but we're actually going to provide for you guys. We'll obviously gray out the names and some of the account-specific items, but we'll post that on this particular settlement so you guys have a lot of the step-by-step that we've done. I think it's very important that you guys have a copy of everything and can see. And again, it'll have a big disclosure, right, that we're not giving you you know, tax or legal advice if you guys need to do that on your own, but you'll at least see how this went down for us. So very good. So now moving forward to actually get this in, when we've got that there, what's next? There's a key agreement that we actually have to get them to sign after the acknowledgement letter.
Can you repeat? I'm sorry.
Can you hear me okay?
I can now. Could you repeat that question?
Oh, just, you know, following our acknowledgement letter, kind of going down this checklist that we've got, they're obviously needing to sign an agreement that we have prepared and sent over to them.
Yeah.
And that's our settlement agreement. What are some of the things that are important about our settlement agreement? And then, you know, obviously accompanying that along with that, there's another document we need. Just maybe comment on that process.
The settlement agreement basically just shouldn't have, it shouldn't have a an expiration date. It should have a deadline date. That's the key. Never put an expiration date, just put a deadline date. And that verbiage is worth millions of dollars to you, literally, if you do this process the correct way. And then you also, once you receive the money in-house, you also, in the acknowledgement letter, you send the borrower a letter acknowledging that you're in receipt of the funds and that within 30 days or whatever the legal compliance is in reference to the release or satisfaction, it will be completed and it will be sent to them. You'll send them a copy of the completed document, and once it's recorded, you'll send them a copy of the recorded release or satisfaction.
Okay, very good. So you guys, that is important, and that particular checklist on what you do, I know that's what we're all hoping for, is to have a few of these key settlements come in to help pull up the overall blended return of the pool. You will have some, like we told you, this is a grand slam loan in this particular portfolio. What we do have in full transparency, we do have in that same pool. At the moment, we have three. Well, I take that back. We now have two because one was dismissed, but we had three of the files that filed for BK, Chapter 13, with the intent to strip our lien. And so that's in there, and that will obviously drag down your return. But we did have one of those that we talked about at our workshop, in our last live workshop in San Diego that we had there at the Courtyard Marriott. We talked about that. If you see on the recording in the members area, you can see that. But we actually had that particular file was right in the area where they're, and I'm assuming this is why they dismissed it, that maybe they have other reasons why they ended up just dismissing the BK 13. I know they didn't file the necessary paperwork, but it looks like we could question value. And that's what our attorney submitted for us, where it was right there on the cusp, where even if there's a dollar of equity, they couldn't lien strip us. And we actually were having a negotiation with the borrower beforehand. So just to give you an idea, I'm constantly going to be drilling into your minds, as I'm still drilling into my own mind, this concept of blended pools, blended returns, blended rates. Right, because if you really focus in on that one loan that you lost out on versus the overall portfolio, that's something, you know, I had a hard time doing as we moved into this mindset of working with junior liens. So, very good. Any other comments on that,
Sabrina? I'm not done in reference to their closeout.
Oh, good. Keep going then. Sorry. I forgot.
Yeah, that's okay.
Steps here on the list. Sorry, I was jumping ahead. Go ahead.
The other thing that if this is for those of you who may have first mortgages and you take a settlement, if you have forced place insurance under your servicer, you need to actually cancel that forced place insurance from the day you took your settlement. That needs to be a part of your process. The other thing is that you need to close your file with your servicer if it's being serviced. If you actually are internally servicing your own loans, you need to change the status to your loan to either close or liquidate it, so you know that's a loan that you no longer have to look at anymore. And make sure that once you have sent out your satisfaction or your reconveyance, that you make a copy of that and you attach it to your file to keep it for your own records to show that you were actually compliant with that piece of the documentation on your loan closeout process. And that this way, this is a clean process in reference from beginning to end when you actually initiate your settlement or your payoff till the very end, and it'll become very systematic in reference to that.
Okay, very good. What I wanted to do, you guys have all been on mute, and I appreciate that. If you have a question as it relates to this process, are we all done, Sabrina? I better just double check with you to make sure we didn't miss anything else.
Yes, we're all done.
Okay, I'm not going to get put in timeout. Thank you. All right, so let's go ahead. Star to unmute yourself if you've got a question on. You know, we did a high-level overview on some of the types of equity and how that affects it. One thing we will have coming up in the next 3 weeks is a session on pricing the loans just based on the equity and how that affects pricing. So we'll talk about that coming up. But if you have any questions that relates to the equity as it relates to closing out a settlement, ask those. I know a lot of you are in the process where you don't have one of those yet, but you will, and we hope this will be a great resource that you can just type in the search bar in the members area for anything that we've got under settlement checklist, right, and things you've got there. So go ahead, anybody. I noticed Mr. Darren Moon's on the call too. I might have to have him get on. In fact, I'm going to put you on alert there, Darren, if you're there. I'd like to have you. We got an exciting email from Darren today, and I think we've got some time here in a minute just to have you talk about that. That's exciting. Just give us high level if you can, Darren. But go ahead. No questions on that. You guys are like absorbing that all. Very good. All right. Let's do this. While we've got you on, I know, Bill, you had emailed some questions in. So if you want to star, and I'm just going to have you repeat those for the group. Do you have those there handy? Star, Bill Rao, paging Bill Rao. I see that you're on the call.
I was just trying to, am I there?
Yeah, that sound is really bad. Are you on speaker? Can you put the phone up?
I'm on speaker, actually.
Oh, can you go off speaker if possible? If not, that's okay too, but.
I'll have to call. I haven't called in.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. Just ask your question there, and then we'll mute you up.
I was wondering, if you get lien stripped on a Chapter 13, can you go to court and get a judgment?
I will answer that question. No, you cannot. But you also need to know that unless they complete the Chapter 13 and a lien strip, the lien is not stripped until they actually have completed their plan. So always keep a watch on it, even if you have been lien stripped.
Okay, perfect. And then the other question is, should we be concerned about MERS, any of our notes that were in MERS?
Well, in reference to MERS, you can join MERS, and it's not that big of an issue. And if you buy loans that are housed in MERS, it's an electronic system. And all you have to do is have your loans transferred out of MERS, and your loans do not lose value. I know that there's a lot of talk around some questionability in reference to things that's going on with MERS. But I don't feel that there's a huge concern to me. I managed a portfolio last year. We bought 260 loans out of MERS. We made a business decision not to join MERS because there was too much red tape. It was a lot of work to go into joining MERS, and you literally had to take all your clothes off in order to join. So we decided to transfer all of our loans out of MERS, and we didn't have any problems. And we were able to collect on those loans.
So we shouldn't be concerned with the assignment chain if MERS was part of it.
That is correct.
Thank you.
So I just back up. If you guys have, start unmute if you have questions. So just to make sure, Sabrina, I mean, this is something I hadn't thought of until Bill brought it up in Las Vegas this weekend. So in when there's a lien strip, you're saying that you could not pursue a deficiency judgment at all, or until, I know you're not an attorney, so it's definitely, that would be something where you'd probably consult a BK attorney, but you're saying to pursue that judgment after the fact, you're not allowed to do that according to your knowledge, or you've just never gone about doing that, or?
We've never done it. We've never pursued a deficiency judgment in reference to a lien strip. There's really, you're treated as an unsecured creditor. It doesn't mean that, you know, now my lien has been stripped and now I can pursue a deficiency judgment. You can't do that, because pretty much you're going to waste more money, because then you're going to force them into a 13. That's just on the logical standpoint of it.
Well, exactly. And I agree with that. It's like, why would you throw good money after bad? Write that off. So I was agreeing on that. I just wondered if, you know, legally that seems like, you know, you should be able to still pursue and collect if they owed you the money, whether you wanted to or not. But okay, very good. Other questions? Any other questions? One thing I'd love to have people that were there. I know we had a lot of representation from the group at the event up in Las Vegas at Noteworthy. And I'd love to hear you guys, just maybe one thing you got out of the event. I know for us, just the networking was one of the main reasons we ended up going. I was able to obviously do a presentation and exhibit and talk about our group to help grow the group, which is exciting. I'm anticipating at least 3 to 5 new members coming out of that event. I've got several people that have emailed me with inquiries in the last 48 hours that I've got to be getting back to. I had a meeting yesterday with a gentleman that is going to be at our workshop and plans on joining, very successful real estate investor. So this is great. Other questions, guys? Be on alert if you want to chime in, if there's no questions, and just talk about one of your big takeaways from the event. I know Bill Rao is there, Jim Miller. Who else is on the call here? Kelly was there, Richard, Gary, you know, Darren, anything. Sam, you were there. So I know there's 3 or 4 that aren't on the call currently that were also there. So any other questions? You're going to give us a pass to get off early today, guys. This is your time. We blocked off this hour. Feel free to take advantage of it. We've got open Q&A. Anything else?
Do we have any status on Trinity?
Status on Trinity, we have an in-person meeting. I know our staff was contacting all of you just to get an updated number on how many collateral files you've received. We're pending several as well on the actual purchase we did. So we hope to get some answers on that. The concern we had was the replacement loans. Hold on here. Someone's talking in the background. Go ahead and start to unmute, but do it when you're ready to ask your question, please. So that's, we will have a full status review on because we're taking a spreadsheet that we've accumulated for everybody, and we'll be talking about those. They're anxious to fund another round, and we've got several people ready to fund, but our goal is to make sure we've just buttoned up some loose ends as much as possible on that as we meet with them in person. So that should be either this Friday or the following Monday is what the two options are. So if there's any other questions that you guys have that you want to take to them, we can do that. Go ahead. Who's there? Is that you?
Travis, this is Kelly. Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Okay, so I received an email yesterday from Allied, and on one of my loans, it says no collateral received on hold. Note borrower has open complaint for violations by previous servicer, Land Home Financial Services. I recommend having this loan repurchased immediately. That was from Melissa.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that, and I had Monica flag that. So that'll be one that we take with him there. That was a previous servicer. So very good.
Can you tell us about that? What does that mean, kind of?
Well, the only thing I can think of on that, and Sabrina, you can comment, but whatever, you know, issues happened with the previous servicer, the borrower opened up a complaint, you know, and I'm assuming that's a CFPB complaint. So we're going to dig to find out a little bit more on that, but that should be something that, you know, is easily resolved. I say easily, if there's ever an easily resolved item.
No easy button.
We'll be on top of that. But I was looking up that particular loan just to see what the numbers were in terms of a swap out to see what we're looking at. So, but yeah, that's the first time I'd heard of that. Have you heard of that, Sabrina? Where there's been a complaint filed against the previous servicer?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Just wanted to find out on that. So, okay, great question, Kelly. I appreciate you.
All right, thank you.
Anybody else have a question to go over or a big takeaway from Noteworthy? Come on, you guys. I had a couple emails there that
I have a question.
Go ahead. Who's this?
This is William.
Go ahead, William.
Hey, just got a question kind of unrelated a little bit, but on the RESPAs, from the date the sale agreement is executed, how many days, Sabrina, is it from that date that the goodbye letter has to be sent out? It's 15 days, right?
Unmute. Hold on. Let me unmute her.
Did you hear me?
Oh, no. You were unmuted. Go ahead, Sabrina. You're on mute. Go ahead.
It's 15 days.
Yeah. And then the hello letter has to come in within, is it from 15 days from the sale date also, or is it 15 days from the last date? So there's an effective date. Is the effective date, is it the 15 days later from the sale agreement date?
You there, Sabrina? No, we must have lost her. She's still on. Oh, she's not. We must have lost her, William. But on the, can you hear me, William?
Yeah.
Okay. So on the hello letter, you know, that we've typically ran the numbers from the time that the goodbye letter took place. We don't send that out until we've got the copy of the goodbye letter in terms of the hello letter. And that's if we're self-servicing. Obviously, the servicer is doing all of that for you.
Right. So this is if we're self-servicing.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah. So, and the other thing is we've heard in the past on your TILA letter, you know, your notification of transfer of ownership of the loan, right? You know, those are things that we send out within 30 days, right, of having purchased the loan. Just we want that to be very obvious. We actually send that out from our office. So, and we've heard, you know, on calls here and from other people that on a junior lien, it's not necessary to send that, but we actually send it anyway, just from our marketing standpoint. We want them to know right away, even though the verbiage in the goodbye and hello letter can cover you on that, but we still do that just for the record. So anything else on that? Maybe Sabrina will chime back in and can update us on some stuff there, but it looks like we lost her, dang it. So, okay, go ahead.
You guys, I'm actually here. The other thing that I wanted to point out, I don't know what my phone just cut out and I couldn't, cell phone, Verizon, maybe I need a new carrier. the other thing is that if your servicer sends out that letter, make sure that you know that there is a cost involved in that letter going out. So I just want to kind of keep you guys in tune with not having any surprises when there, you know, if you buy 20 loans that you didn't put in an estimated cost for those letters to go out, because a lot of the servicers do charge you $25 per letter.
So is that in addition, Sabrina, is that in addition to the boarding fee, or is that part of the boarding fee? That's an additional bump.
It depends. It depends on the servicer. So make sure you get a pricing sheet so you know what those a la carte charges are and what's included.
Review your servicing agreement when you board, because typically it's outlined in there. So good insight. Great insight. Good question,
Sabrina.
William.
Yeah, I have another question. Well, kind of follow up for that question. So, Sabrina, now that you're back on the call, is the hello letter have to be go out also within 15 days of the sale agreement, or?
It's not the sale agreement, because the goodbye letter has to go out first. So it's 15 days after the goodbye letter has gone out. So you have to give that time. You have to give the mailing time, which is 7 to 14 days. So that 15th day is when you need to send it out.
Okay. Excellent.
And just so you know, William, you're typically approving the information in that letter. Does that make sense? I mean, your seller's just making sure, they're making sure that you've got everything, that it's correct and how you want it, and out it goes. And then that starts the clock there. So good question. All right, William.
Thank you. Richard
Bowie, you're like letting me down here. Usually you're jumping in with a question, and Bill's going to have his second question before you even get your word in. Go ahead, William.
Bill? Bill, me?
I'm good now. I've got my answer. But Richard?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Bill. Bill Rao, go ahead.
Yeah, so what happens when the seller sends out the goodbye letters, but they haven't sent the collateral to the servicer in order for them to determine what should be put into the hello letter?
Great question, Bill. Do you want to take that, Sabrina?
Well, it's one of those gray areas. Technically, if you don't have the collateral, you guys don't shoot me, I'm just answering the question. If you don't have the collateral, and the collateral hasn't exchanged, it does make things more complicated. And really, the letters, the goodbye letters shouldn't go out, or the hello letters shouldn't go out until you have the collateral. But that's not how things have been done. I'm just giving the honest answer. I mean, we've done it in the past. We've sent the hello letter, and we've basically taken the information off of the data tape in order to get that information on the hello letter. It's estimated information. It's not always factual information. I'm being honest.
No, I we appreciate honesty and transparency here in this group. That's really good. But so a follow-up question to that. Go ahead, Bill. You chimed in. You got another question?
I have a follow-up question. So what's our exposure?
What's your exposure?
Yeah, what's the risk to us?
You're echoing really, really bad. Are you wanting to know what your risk is because that happened?
Yes.
What's your risk if you actually send out the letters before having the collateral? Is that what you're saying, Bill?
Well, it's not against the law for you not to have your collateral. The only thing is, if you're estimating those fees, if you're wise, you're estimating those fees lower and not higher, and the downfall to that is, and the risk is, that you can't recover all of your money. That, I mean, you'll be a few thousand dollars off.
You do need to
take a look at that, because I won't call anybody on the table, but I had a trustee who was actually sending out demand letters and was actually just using the last dollar amount that was on the data tape, and he pretty much cost his clients anywhere from $30,000 to $50,000 on some of those letters because he just used what was on the data tape from the trade. And also, on some of the hello letters that I saw from a particular seller, and it's not Trinity, just so you guys know, it's not Trinity, but they actually had the wrong UPB on the letters. So as I was working that portfolio for that particular client, I just never requested any money greater than what was on that hello letter.
Very good, very good. So the question I've got is, we actually had started calling, and we were literally got down the road on one of these files, and we didn't have the full assignment chain, and we had already worked out the loan with this borrower in Texas, and I guess it just kind of goes along that same process. Obviously, you'd want to wait till after those letters had gone out and they got it where you're calling and confirming receipt of the letter. I mean, those are just excuses that we've used to call and, you know, did you get the letter? We just wanted to let you know, you know, we're in touch, and, you know, because you're trying to verify, right, if we've got their correct calling information. So very interesting. Other questions?
Yeah, Travis, can you hear me?
Richard, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I guess a question for Sabrina following up on that hello, goodbye letter. You know, we received, like, several goodbye letters from Trinity. And, you know, we're trying to confirm whether they sent it out. We don't really know if they sent it out or not, because it happened right during the transition, you know, between Morgan and the new person and Mindy. So I guess, you know, it's been a while, so I guess I'm a little concerned about the exposure that we have in terms of not sending out the hello letters in time. And I think partially because, you know, we have it blocked with Allied, and since they haven't gotten the original collateral, they really haven't moved. They haven't really done anything.
So, well, it's a business decision, and you've made the business decision to do business with Trinity. You have to trust that the letters went out. They don't send them out certified mail, so the only thing you can do is trust that they sent them out. They provided you a copy of the letter. I would basically, the CYA, when I sent out my my information package to my borrower, I would just actually provide a copy of that letter with my package, just for, you know, for CYA.
Okay, hey, thanks, Travis. It looks like you muted me and unmuted me. I'm driving, so that helped.
I apologize to do that. I just wanted to keep the quiet. Go ahead.
That's fine. So, I guess the challenge that we have is, you know, we don't have the collateral documents or the physical collateral documents to Allied yet, so they haven't really worked on it. So they're the ones that typically send out the hello letters for us, right? I'll work with them and try to figure it out. I got another question for you.
Hey, Richard, before you ask that second question, the one thing, and I want to put this on the call here so that when we tag this particular question for searchable results on the members here, is you actually, I strongly encourage you guys to approve. I mean, we get a copy of that goodbye letter because I want to make sure it's right. And so, you know, that's just send it to me. You know, we asked to have that done prior to them sending it out. And typically that's something they've accommodated us with. So I'm not, you know, that's just what we've done because I want to make sure it's correct. So in terms of putting that in a process, you know, I just, hey, please, if it's what's going out. Sometimes they just send them out, right? But I like to try it whenever possible to insert myself. That's what we're doing on our end just to make sure they're correct. So not always a requirement, but I would definitely suggest doing that. So go ahead with your second question.
Well, just to finish that thought, Travis, I think I'll have to trust that they sent it out and then I'll convince Allied to send it out without the original collateral documents because I don't think they normally do that. So the second question I have is related to a foreclosure. So anyway, I'm a proud owner of a house in Hanford, California. It foreclosed today. So what should I be?
Congratulations.
Thanks. So I guess at a high level, Sabrina, can you tell me like what should be the next steps?
There was a bunch of, I don't know, there was somebody else talking. There was a bunch of, I didn't hear the question. I'm sorry.
Richard is saying he's the proud owner of a home that foreclosed today. And from a high level, he just wanted to know if you could comment on some of the items that he needs to be aware of and be looking at from here going forward. Obviously, the subject of a full call that we'll definitely, you know, document here going forward as one of the topics, but maybe you can just comment on that on a high level.
He actually foreclosed?
Yeah, he actually, the sale was today, Richard, and you took it back at the trustee sale.
Is it occupied or is it vacant?
It's occupied, I believe. I mean, I talked to the guy about 2-3 weeks ago, and he was still living in there, so I think he's still there. But anyway, it's in California as well.
Is there any equity?
There's no equity in terms that the loan is about what the property's worth, but there's a very good loan mod on the first. So if I can make some money by renting it out even while I'm paying the first. You know, there's a buffer about like $400.
So is he current on the first?
He was as of like a month ago, but I think September, I don't think he paid.
Is he willing to give you money every month?
I'm sorry?
So he knows that, I'm assuming if you talk to him, he'd know that you're the owner and you now need to have a conversation with them to see what you're going to do?
Yeah, I had a conversation. I have had several conversations with him. He just thinks that, you know, it's underwater because obviously with the first and the second together, it's pretty significantly underwater. But if it's just the first, then we're about even. And he just basically said that he doesn't want to do anything because it's a bad investment for him. That's how he phrased it. And I asked him, you know, it's going to cost you $1,400 to go rent a comparable place. And he says, well, you know, he had a divorce. He divorced recently. So he says, all you need is a one bedroom. He told me he can get that rented for $800. You know, it was hard to get anything with him, and he didn't want to pay.
Sounds like a cash for keys and hustle and get a renter in there at $1,400.
Yeah. So basically the rent is about $1,400 and the monthly payment for the first is about $1,000. That's PIPI.
Good for you. I look at that as a positive situation. Yeah. The key is going to be to talk with him and incentivize him to get out. I know we've got probably some other comments. And everyone else on the call, if you have some insight on that, feel free to chime in.
You guys, I don't know what happened. I don't even know how much of you what you heard that I said, if you heard anything.
Not just if you said in the last 6 seconds, we didn't get any of it.
You didn't get any of it. Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry.
So say it again. Your cheek muted out your phone. Go ahead.
So, there was actually a call coming in, and it actually came through, and I didn't even realize it.
Gotcha.
What I stated was is that I have actually been successful on renting a property back to a borrower from second position after foreclosing. But you have to make sure that they're going to be on board, and you're going to have to make sure that they're not going to go south on you. So you need to make sure that emotional equity is really, really there. And you need to make sure that you stay on them to keep the first current so that the first doesn't foreclose. Who's the first lender?
Did you get that, Richard? Who's the first?
Yeah, it's Wells Fargo. Sorry about that.
It's who?
Wells Fargo.
It's Wells Fargo. Well, that's a plus because I actually, Wells was actually also the lender on the previous loan that I had, and they did not foreclose, and we were able to continue to make payments. But I will tell you, probably 7 months in, the borrower got cold feet and they walked. So I ended up having to put the property on the sale.
Yeah, I would be really curious as we as a group go through this more and more, and I know we've got some other seasoned REO brokers in the group, but just to see in situations where, you know, anyway, just when a tenant's left in the property that's the holdover, you know, homeowner, what the statistics are. I haven't had as good a luck with that, and so I just would be curious as we start to aggregate the data. There, I don't know, but I can see how you'd have success, but I think they would have to have some sort of incentive that they would get the property back at some point, which, you know, I'm not sure all the legalities of all that, but anyway, other questions? Very good, Richard. We'll keep us posted on that. We'd like to have updates as you go along on how successful you are. It sounds like you got a couple of scenarios there. Any questions before we go? You got Kelly, go ahead.
Are we going to hear the Darren story?
Darren, he's on mute. Darren, did you want to talk about it today or prep for next week? What do you prefer? Because it's a really good workout, and I'd like to have him, but it's not looking like he's coming off mute there. So I will have him. We will prep that for next week. I'm excited about it. I'm very excited about it. That's another one. He's got a lot of files that are right in that, I call it the popping of popcorn stage. You know, it's kind of warmed up and just starting to pop. So very good. Any other questions, guys? that we've got before we call it a day? Well, I know we've got several of you coming with to hang out with us on the 23rd and 24th. If you have any specific items that you'd want to walk out of there with, you know, please forward that as soon as possible. And if you've got some specific files that you've gotten in touch with borrowers on, Supreme will be in town all week, starting Sunday through Saturday. But if there's some specific files that you've got questions on, you know, we're all here to help, and we'd love to hear from you. So anyway, we hope you guys can make it out on the 23rd and 24th. I know several have already registered. And if you guys have, I mentioned in the email, you know, it's just a little additional income stream if you guys are interested in getting set up as a referral affiliate for the different events we're doing, obviously for the summit in February, for the workshops, you know, or even for the group. You know, we do process referral checks and commissions for helping us grow the group. So see us if that's of interest to you, because obviously the bigger the group is, the better our buying power is, and group discounts and the collaboration. We've had a couple of different masterminds at the office for people that are, you know, around and able to stop in and work on files. It's been really, really beneficial for everybody. And people really resonated at Noteworthy. They hadn't heard of the co-invest option that we've set up, and they were very intrigued. And so I think we're going to see more and more in terms of the growth of the group. So we're excited about that. Well, email me if something comes up, you know, shoot us an email with questions. And the offer is, this is literally, some people don't believe it, but it's an open offer. If you need to bring your laptop by the office or set up some sort of a web-based go-to meeting to go over a problem file or just questions you've got, please reach out to us. If it's something that would benefit the whole group, obviously we would like to prep to have that on the Tuesday call. And we will at least once a month be sending out a link where we'll do a webinar, because we'll want to show you some specifics on a file, and we'll go from there. So again, great, great call this week, and we will see you guys same time, same place next week at 1:30 Pacific. Thanks so much. Have an outstanding week, everybody.